Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Originally today, we were going to talk about blue-green algae, and that has been postponed until next week. So I did some research for a while yesterday, and I realized that there's some more stuff out there about Jahi, the 13-year-old that was declared brain dead. And I read one of the articles that I found, which I'm going to share with you all this morning. But what it got me thinking about and actually worrying about is the fact that little by little, step by step, incident by incident, a lot of our rights are not really being taken away from us. They're being like usurped. And it's scary for me. There's large organizations, there's companies, there's agencies, there's bureaucratic red tape, and maybe not with the intent to do this, although I believe in some cases it is. But the end of the day, the end of the story, is that we lose another right. This past year I've talked about a lot of things that you should exercise about your rights. We've talked about the right to make decisions just this week about medical versus holistic, or chemical versus natural. Those are your rights to make that decision. It's your right to decide about your health care, even though that gets grayer and grayer as we speak. It's your right to vote, in some cases not. Politically speaking, it's your right to vote. In some places, you have no say at all. It's also a right to care for your children, raise them the way you see fit. If you are a Catholic family, you have the right to raise your children Catholic. If you are a Protestant family, the same, a Baptist family, a Jewish family, an Orthodox Jewish family, Hindu, whatever you are, you have that right with your children. We found out this year that media and places like that have rights with our children when they're not in our home that I believe we all thought they needed our consent to take pictures of them, to take blood from them, to have discussions with them in regard to their curriculum, their life, without ever asking us anything. So just this year, it's come to my realization that a lot of the things that I took for granted are gone. So that's one of the reasons I'm so incited by what is happening to this young girl, this 13-year-old child. That's one of the reasons that I feel so strongly about the fact that we need to make sure what our rights are. And sometimes people can just change them on a whim, especially organizations and hospitals and even courtrooms. If somebody can dig up something from 100 years ago that hasn't been erased from the ledgers, that hasn't been deemed not usable or not to set precedence, something that you take for granted right now can change. How scary is that? For me, that's very scary. I cherish my right, because as a moderate income family most of our lives, sometimes breaching on pretty broke, sometimes in a little bit better place. Rights are important because when you don't have the money to get anything you want, you have to depend on your rights to get the things that you need. When I read about this story the very first time, I was appalled to think that it was somebody else's decision as to whether or not a child lived or died. And as I analyzed it, I understood that, of course, the hospital, who's got to spend the money, and if there isn't insurance and all that kind of stuff, then I could see a little shadow of why something like that could happen. I'm a Libra. I always try to look at both sides of a story. However, now they made decisions. They moved forward, and yet there's still these comments, these people who sit in a chair. You know, it's like the weekend warriors who can tell all the coaches and all that kind of stuff and all the players that are making millions of dollars a year how to play a game. You know, you can't. You're not out there in those cleats, and you're not sitting in the seats of the people that are involved with this young girl. And when I look through the internet, there's lots of stories out there that that really, really scare me when I think about how they're hovering over, like vultures, our rights to snatch up whatever right they can when they see an opportunity. We can't let that happen. We really, really can't let that happen. I'm going to bring in Shelley so we can talk a little bit about this before I read this article. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you, honey?
Doing pretty good. So yeah,
pretty
so
chilly
out there
this morning. Pretty chilly out there this morning.
Oh, my God. I was actually able to see my breath. I felt like I was back in New York. It was, like, pretty amazing, you know. I actually have two robes on because I have my regular robe, and then I put one of these big woolly robes. Matter of fact, I think you gave it to me as a Christmas present. It's got hearts all over it, and it's really heavy.
Yeah.
And it's got a hood and everything. So, yeah, so I was out there with two robes on this morning. I was freezing.
Well, I brought my plant in.
I got on the show a few minutes late because I kept getting a crackly connection. It took me like three times to get in. And I heard you, I guess we're postponing Blue Green Algae because you want to talk about this. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, and I couldn't get a hold of the lady that I want to be on the show. So there's three of them that I can probably get. So I'm hoping by Monday I can get them on the show. And, of course, you and I have information about Blue Green Algae.
I have a lot of information here about blue-green algae. I have articles that were in the Hippocrates magazine. I have advertising from the place out in Oregon that actually manufactures it. So if that happens again, then I'll just prepare something from the information I have.
Okay. That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect because I really think the way things are going right now, and, you know, one of the other things that we need to touch base on is here in Florida, when the weather gets cold like this, it takes a real toll on Floridians because our bodies are not accustomed to this kind of cold. Everybody gets sick. Everybody.
Well, one thing before we continue, if everybody would take natural form of D3, vitamin D3, if you go on Amazon or in Whole Foods, there are many brands that are vegetarian sources, and that's the highest in integrity. If you get a good vegetarian source of vitamin D3, it will boost your immunity and help your body to protect you from flus and things like that. Because one of the reasons why people get sick when it's cold out is that generally the sunlight is less intense, and that's where you get D3 from, is from sunlight. And in the wintertime, people are out less, it's colder, the intensity of the sunlight is less because it's further away from us, and it causes a D3 deficiency, and that's why people get sick in the wintertime. So if you supplement in the winter months with D3, it will boost your immune system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm a really big proponent of Cemento, which is cat's claw, and it's all natural. And you can use cat's claw in your drink, in your juice, and even in water. It doesn't taste very good. So I would say if you put it in juice, that would be a great idea. Or if you juice, put it in the juice that you're juicing. But it also, when I first started working at Hippocrates, I have a low ebb time in March. and I would get sick every year. And Anna Maria put me on Cemento, and it helped every year. I might still lose my voice. I might still have a sore throat for a few days, but I didn't get down and out. So, and I think the D3, too, is a very valuable piece of information because Shelley's right. We are accustomed to sunshine. And if you never have it, it's one thing. But if you're accustomed to having it, it's another. So that's important. I want to, though, talk about today more than anything. You heard most of my opening dialogue this morning about our rights and the fact that we've learned that anybody can take a picture of your kid unless they're sneaking into your house or in your backyard, and it can't be pornographic. But otherwise, they can. They can take a picture of your kid at the park without your permission, even if your kid's 4 years old, 5 years old. I knew that there was no way to protect that right at the end of the day. I mean, if you were, if you were at the park and not paying attention and somebody snapped a shot, or it's a big party and somebody snapped a shot of your kid, I realized that it wasn't not realistic to think that that was a right you could exercise on a regular basis, but I still thought it was your right to say, hey,
right,
you know, you're going to take a picture of my kid, you need to talk to me about it. And we also found out that at 17, they can talk your kid into giving blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And what if your beliefs at home don't coincide with that and your kid's afraid to tell anybody that? Or maybe they even say, oh, that's not a big deal, your mother won't care or your father won't care, and take their blood anyway. They get a movie ticket. You know,
right.
So there's some enticement there as well. So we found out slowly but surely many of our rights are being not just taken away from us, but kind of consumed. Yeah,
yeah,
they really, really are. And then, of course, there's the ones of anonymity. If you're a minor, those are hard to keep, those rights. And, of course, media oversteps their bounds in a lot of different cases. But that's what got me started on this story about Jahi. First of all, I was beside myself when I realized that a tonsillectomy caused this, and I still don't have any answers to that. But most recently, about every other day, I check to see if there's any more news, because it's not making the front page anymore because everybody thinks it's a done deal. Well, I can promise you that her family doesn't think it's a done deal. I can promise you that. So this article that I found and I posted on my Facebook page, I find to be, first of all, very well written, but I also find it another time when everybody, even the public, seems to think somebody should step in and intervene, that they shouldn't have this right. Even the public thinks that. What in the hell makes it any of their business? But at any rate, I want to read this real quick so that we can discuss it. But think about all the different things that you grew up believing were going to be your right. And now you find out that you can't always get that right, that you can't. It's not always just automatically a right, like a right is supposed to be. Sometimes there's a big staircase you have to climb before you can get to that right. And for me, if you'll excuse the pun, that's just not right. So we have the parents of brain-dead Shahi McMath aren't fools, as they have the right to make, and they have the right to make medical decisions for a child, the California couple's attorney said. Despite the hateful public rhetoric that has surrounded this case, I believe that self-interest alone should lead most Americans to thank Nalia Winkfield, Jahi's anguished mother, for her courage. Christopher Dolan, who has represented Jahi's family free as they fought against Children's Hospital and Research Center in Oakland, from removing their daughter from life support systems, wrote in a commentary published on Tuesday in the Los Angeles Times. For the most part, those who have attacked Jahi's family argue these simplistic, uninformed points. The family is either stupid, misled by their lawyer, or trying to exploit the system. Why can't they simply accept the doctor's decrees? Why should they be different? The 13-year-old underwent a tonsillectomy on December 9th at Children's Hospital and Research Center in Oakland and was declared brain dead after she went into cardiac arrest and suffered extensive brain hemorrhaging. Three neurologists confirmed she was unable to breathe on her own, had no blood flow to her brain, and no electrical activity. While at the hospital in Oakland, she was on a ventilator and was receiving fluids intravenously, but was not being given nutrition. Her family fought for the right to transfer her to another care facility where she could receive nutrition, hoping for a miraculous recovery. Jahi now is at another facility and is receiving nutrition through a feeding tube. Dolan said the events at the Oakland Hospital will most likely be a matter of litigation. I'm sure of that. But if you were Jahi's mother, now think about this, would you want the doctors and hospital authorities you believed had contributed to or possibly even caused your child to be declared brain dead, making final decisions about her? Now that's a major, major, big, fat point, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
Wingfield was cruelly forced to get a death certificate from the Alameda County Registrar of Births and Deaths to remove Jahi from the Oakland Hospital to a site where she could receive care. Now that, what was that all about? I mean, you know why? Because of the litigation. They're going to have that death certificate that the mom signed in their hands in the courtroom. And hopefully this isn't 5 years from now, so the actual depth of this has been forgotten. That, too, was an ordeal because the agency didn't want to issue the certificate because Jahi was still on life-supporting systems. He also noted that being declared brain dead by a doctor isn't sufficient as a declaration of death everywhere in the United States. Now, that paragraph I don't completely understand. He also noted that being declared brain dead by a doctor isn't sufficient as a declaration of death everywhere in the United States. So that means that on the death certificate, they cannot write reason for death or reason, however it's worded, brain death. They can't write that because that's not sufficient reason for death. So that
right.
tells us something, doesn't it?
Of course.
Nalia's fight is the fight of a loving mother for her child. It is a fight for privacy in the making of medical decision. It is a fight for a strongly held belief in the miracles and the mercy promised by the Bible. If any among her critics share her faith, how could they call her ignorant or ridiculous for actually believing in the power and the mercy of God? If they would have made a different decision, then right on. They are Americans, and they get to make their own choice. Now, for me, this particular article speaks volumes. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to me, there's two things going on here. There's the reaction of a lot of the public that are shooting out nasty and critical barbs that aren't helpful in any way, which tells me that the people that are doing that have too much time on their hands and aren't looking at this with compassion. And the only time people look at situations without compassion is when their own life isn't in order, because it's so much easier to look at other people and find out what's wrong with them instead of looking at your own house and cleaning your own house. People tend to try to clean other people's houses instead of cleaning up their own messes. And that's one of the things that's really wrong with this country is people spend too much time looking over the fence at their neighbors and they never clean up their own yard. The other thing is the, like what the article said, is that why is the institution, the hospital, that may have done something wrong, and we don't know that they did, but all we know is that this child suffered a terrible complication, whether it was because a doctor made a mistake or it was just part of her condition, we really don't have a clear understanding of. But why was that hospital allowed then, once this happened, before any evidence showed whether or not it was their fault or not, why were they given the authority to make the decision as to whether or not she would stay on nutrition, whether or not she would stay on life support? It's kind of like what's going on in the medical society right now, where the FDA is funded, and the majority of the funding for the FDA comes from the pharmaceutical companies. That's a conflict of interest. This is a conflict of interest. You know, how do you have a governing body that's supposed to be an overseer for an agency being funded by that, an overseer for an industry being funded by that industry? That's a conflict of interest. This is a conflict of interest. Having that hospital have the authority over a patient that they may have done something wrong against, that's a conflict of interest, because they're going to look to protect their interest and not make decisions based on what's best for that patient. So it should come out of their hands at that point.
Well, and that notwithstanding, all those are true facts. But again, when did that responsibility fall into the hands of the hospital in lieu of the mom again,
right,
or the dad?
At this point, we're not talking an adult that would, yeah, exactly.
Yes. And when did it become a matter of dispute about certain rights like that? I mean, I can understand why, when circumstances don't fit a particular right or law or amendment or anything that we're struggling with in a court of law, I can understand when there's variables, because you do have to, you know, have some flexibilities, because not everything is black and white. But even still, the fact remains that without the help of a breathing machine, many, many people would succumb. Babies, teenagers, adolescents, adults, old people, they would all succumb if they're in trauma. So, and now that I know that little effect that this author wrote, or this lawyer wrote, in regard to the fact that brain death is not a bona fide reason on a death certificate, oh my God, which means that they're sidestepping all the written rules. They're sidestepping and utilizing their power, their money, their ability to say yes or no, because they hold all of the cards. So they get to play God. And that really rubs me the wrong way, and I see that way too much, way, way, way too much. The teacher who got in trouble, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago, we talked about him. The teacher that got in trouble and was accused of rape and didn't even lose his job. Another teacher kisses a girl or a boy or whatever the case might be, and oh my God, there are pictures on the front page of every newspaper in town, and they're ostracized and their career's done.
Right.
So that's one of our big problems. Is there, you know how strongly I feel about if you do this for Joe Schmo, you better do it for Burley Shirley, because otherwise it's not right.
Right.
And that doesn't seem to follow any kind of suit. And I understand different states, different bylaws, and different different things set up in all their organizations and everything. But this seems like a biggie. Life or death decisions seem like big decisions to me. The kind of decisions that should not be left up to an administrator that works in a hospital.
And I don't think it should be left up to a judge that works in a court system who knows nothing about medical testimony. I think that things that go on in hospitals should never be legal. They should always stay in the medical realm. And there should be an overseeing body that's comprised of natural healers, medical professionals, like a panel of maybe 12 people where the majority would rule, so that you're getting different professional opinions of people that know what they're talking about, but not people that are financial experts or judicial experts, because this has nothing to do with law. And I don't understand why so many times there's a conflict between a patient or a patient's family and a hospital administration, and it goes up in front of a judge who knows nothing about medicine. This, to me, is ludicrous, and this happens on a daily basis. You know, somebody gets a stay of order to remove life support, or families are getting an order to remove life support because they want it removed, and the hospital is saying no. So, I mean, it goes both directions, you know. And I don't understand why the judicial system has anything to do with it. This should be something within the medical community, but it should be such that you have a variety of people in the healthcare industry on the panel, including chiropractors, including natural healers, so that you have a well-rounded way of looking at it, and you're getting a lot of different opinions, you know, and then you have to go with the majority vote or something like that. But judges don't know it. I mean, I've had four bad experiences with judges. I'm not going to go into it right now, but in the past 2 years, where they made really, really bad calls. They didn't listen to the testimony in front of them. They came in. I remember the one judge was even complaining that he was in a bad mood. His shoulders hurt. You could see he had his arm in a sling. He wasn't paying attention to half the testimony. It was mind-boggling, and the judgment he ruled went against the facts, went against his prior ruling. We actually had the minutes from a prior hearing. He actually went against his own edict from the hearing before, but forgot what the case was about by the time we got back in front of him. So there's a lot going on, and I don't understand why the courts are even involved when it has to do with something inside of a hospital, other than the fact that people need to get assistance when the hospitals are doing something that they don't think is correct.
Well, they need you know, up the ladder to talk to once they can't make a decision within their own means. I'm sure that hundreds of times every day in hospitals all over the world, this kind of decision is made with the elderly, with the critically ill, and nobody intervenes. Nobody says anything to anybody because people are in acceptance when it's like that. In a lot of cases, when you're waiting for a loved one to pass over because they have a horrible cancer or they've been hurt horribly in a car accident, and you know that their quality of life will never be what it was before. But a 13-year-old who has a freaking tonsillectomy? I mean, why wouldn't you be ashamed of a parent who just said, oh, yeah, okay, thanks for trying? Wouldn't you be more shameful of that person than the one who's fighting, you know, to make sure that their daughter gets everything they're supposed to have?
Well, see, that's why I don't understand why I agree with this article where they said that people should be seeing this woman like as a heroine, a hero, because the bottom line is what she is doing is heroic. This has to be absolutely the most anguish anybody could go through, okay, because now she has to be second-guessing all of her decisions to that point. You have to understand that they got there on the advice of a doctor, okay. There are a lot of disorders out there right now that are actually allowing children to gain a lot of weight because of food sources. So for people to sit there without knowing this family's history, without knowing why this child had the sleep apnea, without knowing why she might have gained some weight, all right, it's really nobody's business. Like I said, my great-niece was really chubby about a year ago. All right, and some of the family members were commenting on that. But then the next year, she grew almost 2 inches, didn't lose any weight, and now she looks slender. All right? That's what happens to kids. This child is a teenager. Who's to say she's not going to grow 3 inches and all of a sudden, you know, she wouldn't have that appearance anymore? So for people to sit back there and make all kinds of judgment calls without knowing the particular facts, without knowing this family, without ever meeting the child, without ever meeting the parents, is wrong. And we do way too much of that in this country. People need to hold their tongues, hold their criticisms, hold their opinions, and either get the facts before they say anything or just speak from compassion, because all the other comments are just destructive, and all they do is they breed hate on top of hate, which does nothing but tear our country apart.
Well, I think that on the subject of the comments about the weight and all the other stuff, again, not only all the things that you just said, but the fact first of all, she's chubby in her face, and she's probably working on becoming a woman. By that, I mean all the things that go with a 13-year-old girl, menstrual cycles, all those kind of things. And most moms would see that. The people that made some of the comments that we read are mean-spirited, unhappy people. And as I've said before, the ones that crow garbage all the time need more help than anybody at the end of the day. But what really has me upset about this more than anything else is the fact that our bureaucracy is taking away our rights little by little by little. Now, you know, my kid got hit by a car when he was 13, same age as this young girl. And he was in a stage 5 coma. And later, during some, what you'd call them, not depositions, but hearings between doctors and lawyers and all this kind of stuff, I was told, which I was never told during the time, which maybe was a blessing, maybe wasn't, that they didn't expect my son to make it. And that's why they didn't insert a tracheotomy. And that was one of his problems when he woke up. So here's me, not the brightest young woman on the block, happy, ecstatic, overjoyed to just have my kid back. The fact that he couldn't breathe and had to wear a trach tube, I was going to deal with. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, and I was going to make sure he was okay. That's the way I thought, that's the way I believed, and that's what I did. So in this courtroom one day with all these people staring at me, which I've done more than once now in my 65 years, passing judgment on me and saying this and saying that, I said, I don't want to sue anybody. I'm grateful that you saved his life. Whatever is going on now, we'll get through. And I walked out of that room, and nobody argued with me because I wasn't trying to get anything from anybody.
Right.
I wasn't some big loss. There was a lawsuit for the lady who hit my son with her car and just kept, you know, never came to see him once at the hospital, never did any of those things. The way I felt about her was a whole different story. And I didn't hate her. I felt kind of sorry for her, but I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, if I'd done this, I'd been there every day with the mom, every day. I figured out a way to every day and make sure that kid survived. But she didn't. Different kind of person. I get all that. But Michael, we had no insurance. They could have said to me after a certain amount of time, you know, Mrs. Brewer, he's still in the same kind of coma he was from the very beginning. It's been 10 days. How do I know if after 14 days, 21 days, whatever, they might have said to me, you know, we can't keep him in intensive care. There's no insurance. This is a county hospital. We have to make room for somebody that we think we can save. They could have said that to me. I didn't know that then, God, because I would have gone nuts. But I know that could have happened back in those days now. But it didn't. My Michael woke up after 10 days. And from there on out, it was an uphill climb as well because of the throat closing and everything. But I had the says. Nobody tried to take away my right to monitor my child's health. However, it was touch and go as to where I could go. Jackson Memorial at one point in time wouldn't even accept him because there was no insurance. Eventually, we worked that out through my workplace, and we got him the help he needed at Jackson Memorial. But the point is that nobody ever looked at me and said, oh, just give up. He's gone. I'd have killed him. I'd have killed him. I'd have killed him. The day that
what astonishes me is that too many things are left to the final decision of an administrator. You know, I've talked about the show ER a couple of times, and can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it sounded like my phone was dead. But, you know, like that one episode, which is classic, and it's like what we're talking about. This woman was bitten by a snake. She was a young woman. She had children. She had a husband. They're there at the hospital. They needed 15 tubes of anti-venom to save her life. But she was healthy in every other regard. The anti-venom was working, but they didn't have enough. So they went to some of their sister hospitals, but they were still 6 vials short, which means they had to go out of their hospital network. This woman had insurance. He went to the administrator, told the administrator that he was going outside the network because evidently that was their protocol. And the administrator said, well, we'll convene in the morning and do a vote on this. And he said, she'll be dead by the morning. He says, I have to have this within the next hour and a half. And the administrator did not give him permission to do that. He said, if you go ahead and do this, he says, your job will be in jeopardy. So the administrator has a woman here in ER, and this is a true story. This is on one of these reality shows. The administrator told the ER doctor that if he did this, even though 6 more vials would absolutely save this woman's life because she was responding, okay, they had already given her 9, all right, or they had given her 6 and 3 more were on the way from sister hospitals. So instead of saying, okay, let's get it, we'll worry about the cost later, he's just a numbers guy. He's just sitting there looking at numbers on the desk saying, oh, well, this is going to cost us more money, not realizing that her insurance is going to pick it up anyway. And that was his protocol is, well, this is our protocol, so we have to stick to it, you know. And the protocols are there for 99% of the situations where you have time to wait till the morning to convene and then make a determination on what's going to happen with this patient. But if you have somebody who's actively dying and you've already spent all this money over here, why wouldn't you go ahead and get those other 6 vials? The decision made no sense from many different standpoints. If the family had found out that the hospital, that this woman died because they didn't get the extra vials, they could have sued the hospital, so it's not even a logical decision there. And the bottom line was that this ER doctor went ahead, went out of network, was infuriated by the administrator's decision, didn't agree with it, saved the woman's life, all right? Here she was able to go home to her young children and her, you know, her family, and did not eventually lose his job, but I forgot what the word is when they're cited for misconduct. He did have to go up in front of a board, and his job was on the line, but once he explained what happened, they decided in his favor. But how many ER doctors wouldn't have gone against the administrator? How many of them would have been too afraid to lose their jobs and not so incensed and looking at what they were there for, which is saving lives, and just not gotten the rest of the anti-venom and let this woman die? And that was absolutely a possibility. That story incensed me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think those kind of things happen a lot. And I think that one of the things that I hear from so many different arenas is that parents just don't care anymore. They're never around. You hear it from the school systems. You hear it from the court systems. You know, well, when I'm in drug court, I hear, you know, people talking about, well, you know, her mom is supporting her and this is happening and that is happening, but, you know, she doesn't make sure that she goes to this and she doesn't make sure, and I think to myself, oh, my gosh, you know, what are y'all thinking? First of all, you know, you can only do what you can do, but passing judgment on something that you don't know the full story about is one of the big problems. But this deal, those are social in my opinion, social problems. The fact that we all think that it's okay to pass judgment on other people, that's a social problem. And hopefully,
right.
You know, if that happens to you, everybody will, you know, stand by your side instead of saying, well, Rainey, you should have done this, or Shelley, you should have done that, or this should have happened, and this is your fault because, you know, you didn't do a good job with this, and you didn't. Hopefully that doesn't happen to you, but it could.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of those kind of people who supports that kind of behavior, it may just well happen to you because karma can be a real mean, nasty lady. So the point is, though, these things are about our rights, our right to do what we think is right.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to children, if they're really my responsibility, then let me take responsibility. Let me make the choices without having this all about how much money you're going to make or how much money you're going to lose. Because then it's no longer fair. Then it becomes a whole other ball game, a whole other situation if it's going to be about how, whether or not I'm going to make you money, save you money, spend your money, whatever it is. That can't be the deciding factor if we're going to play this game and play it the right way. I don't
right.
think.
And see, from my point of view, from the outside looking in, I think there should have been an emergency order forcing the hospital to keep her on nutrition, because while all this was going on, they should have erred in the side of her best interest. And if there
up
was even a 0.1%
right.
chance that she
That's
might
right.
come through this, they should have maintained the integrity of her body while
yes.
the fight was going on. I think that was very irresponsible and inappropriate to allow the hospital to take her off nutrition, because I know the mother was fighting to keep her on nutrition. And they should have maintained the integrity of her body while this fight was going on. You know, especially because they ultimately won and did move her to another facility. But now she had, what was it, 3 weeks without nutrition? Isn't that the time frame it ended up being?
Something like 21 days, yes. Well,
yeah.
And what happened to the Hippocratic Oath? Isn't the Hippocratic Oath, I will do no harm?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say I will do no harm if it doesn't cost me any money. It doesn't say I will do no harm if my boss tells me I don't have to. It doesn't say any of that stuff. It says the Hippocratic Oath, when they become doctors, that that's what the doctor you just talked about took seriously, and hopefully they all take it seriously. But let me say this in behalf of the doctors. All of the things that I've read about this case, they say specialists were called in to examine Jahi, and they made the call as to the fact that she was brain dead. I didn't read anything except from other entities that said, you know, well, we believe if she's brain administrators, yes, and outsiders, yes. Another doctor, the only other doctors that spoke up were the ones that said, you know, brain dead doesn't mean everything you think it means anymore.
Right.
You know, the only
well,
doctors
had,
that...
Well, I mean, I told you, like, Unsolved Mysteries, which is all true documented stories. So this isn't some, you know, like, this isn't some made-up series, all right? And they actually had a whole episode based on Unsolved Mysteries of people that were deemed dead, not brain dead, but dead. In the morgue, you know, getting ready to do an autopsy on them and take their blood out, put the formaldehyde, and these people come back alive. So here's a person who had no life signs, nothing, okay, no brain waves, no heart, nothing, and something happens, and hours later, this person regains consciousness and sits up and starts talking. Oh my God, where the hell am I? There are recorded incidences of this happening. So there is something more that goes on with our bodies than medical science can explain. There's still different connection. You know, they say if the brain's without oxygen for 3 minutes, this happens and that kind of thing. But there are people that have defied that. and have gone 20 minutes or an hour or longer. There have been people that have actually been deemed dead, and then something happened, and they revived full memory, all cognitive. So what's going on in these cases? There are things about the life of this body that we go around in that medical science still does not understand. So utilizing that, just because in 99% of the cases it may be the situation, all right, there has to always be decisions erring on the side of survival, not erring on the side of getting the hospital out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, so many decisions are made for the wrong reason, and so many bureaucrats that sit so far removed from the issue that it's really unfair to them, too, not just to us, but to them, too, to make a bona fide decision about something that they really know nothing about. You know, we talked about this one day briefly, and when I think about the people that make the decisions, and they're sitting like, you know, they might as well be sitting on the moon for as much as they know about what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded of the day that we talked about funerals as well, when a minister or a pastor, whatever, a Catholic priest stands up in front and talks about the passing of a family member. And in a few communities, the families are very close to the clergyman, small churches, country churches, things like that. But normally, you don't really know the priest or a pastor that's in a really, really big congregation and things like that. I'm not saying that that's unheard of, because I know that's not true. But in a lot of cases, the man or the lady that's talking about the passing of a loved one knows them very little. And there's something about that that just rubs me the wrong way. Now, a Catholic priest reads a lot of scripture. He reads things that are organized for Catholicism for a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
They have certain procedures that the priest does, and you know, there's lots of things that are traditional procedure. But I'm talking about, you know, when somebody comes up there and talks about it, and it puts me in mind of our life and our world in general. That's some of these things are very personal. The
mm-hmm.
decision of life or death of your child, it doesn't get any more personal than that.
Well, do you remember when we had the young child from Canada who had come to Hippocrates? He had brain cancer. He had a couple of surgeries. He was only, I think, 5 years old. I mean, he was very little, and he was dying. He was actively dying. And the two surgeries didn't work. The tumor kept coming back. So then they wanted to put the child on chemo, but he had lost so much weight. He was so frail that his parents didn't believe he would survive chemo, so they came to Hippocrates. And they ended up staying on a program for 6 weeks. During that 6 weeks, this kid gained weight, he got color, he started talking, he started playing with other children that were at the institute, all without chemo and radiation. And the parents were served by the Canadian government that when they crossed the border from the United States back into Canada, that they were going to seize the child and force him to go through chemo. This is what the Canadian government is doing. There are areas in the United States where they're starting to do that, where they're forcing parents to have chemo done on their children. I don't understand how that's legal. I don't understand how that's moral, all right? Because as it turned out, the doctor who worked at Hippocrates wrote a letter to the hospital and said, look, before you start doing chemo on this child, please do an MRI. We don't have this type of test equipment. I think you'll see that the tumor has reduced enough that you will allow him to continue with the treatment he's getting. And sure enough, that's what happened. When they did get back to Canada, they did seize the child, but they did the MRI before just putting the shunt in his chest and starting him on chemo, and they found that the tumor had reduced more than 45% in mass, that he had gained weight from the time the hospital had seen him, just in 6 weeks, and they decided not to force him to do the chemo. So thank God they made the right decision, but the fact that the government had the power to even try to force the parents to do chemo on a child where they said, no, this is not safe. My child won't survive it. And that, you know, thank God they came to Hippocrates and made that tumor shrink. But what if they just wanted to spend time to find another alternative? They wouldn't have been allowed to do that. You know, thank God that they went outside the country. But this is happening within the United States now, that people are being forced to vaccinate their children, okay, and that should be a whole topic for another show. People are being forced to do procedures on their children. Otherwise, a doctor will deem them of being a negligent parent, and it's just not the case.
I remember this story very well. The little boy's name was Anna L.
Yep, exactly what I'm talking about.
The second 3 weeks that they stayed, all of the guests at the Institute raised the money to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
His mom already understood raw food because she was a raw food baker.
Right.
She made raw desserts and fancy desserts, and she got it completely. And when they came to me and told me that all that was going to occur when they got home, they asked me what I would do, and that's what I said. I said I would greet them with an MRI. And when they tried to accomplish that with no insurance here in the States, not just at the Institute, we didn't have anything to do that, but when that was they tried to accomplish that in one of the local hospitals, they couldn't have it done. So that's when our doctor wrote the letter and asked for them to check before they moved forward. And to my knowledge, it's been probably 4 years since I've heard from that family, but I did have a connection that I could hear about him every now and then, and he is thriving. And as Shelley said, when he arrived, even though he was no longer an infant, he still suckled from his mother's breast because he got no nourishment in any other way because he was so ill.
Right. And he was very withdrawn, very skinny. He had a terrible pallor. I mean, he was gray. His skin was gray when they arrived. I to see a child like that was just shocking to me.
And that's,
you know,
and
for a doctor to look at him and say our next course of action has to be chemo, I found appalling.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of us would. But, of course, there's a part of the world, and we've talked about this before, and we always have to give fair mention to the fact that I just read this the other day. There are hundreds of thousands of people who have overcome cancer with Western medicine. Yes, there are. But it's not an equal part that succumbed to cancer until sometimes years later. So it's a hard thing to track. And you have to do what you believe in. But again, what is that? The opportunity to make the decision, like I said in the beginning of the show today, as to whether or not you want to do it this way or that way, is what? It's your right. It's your right to make that decision. And we don't want that taken away from us. And I don't want to tell anybody else what kind of decisions to make. I make too many decisions for too many people right now. I don't want to make those decisions for anybody else. But
I don't think that the government or the medical industry should be able to trample on people's rights. And I don't believe that the government has the right to tell people how to take care of their children. Now, to step in with true neglect or abuse, people aren't feeding their children, they're living in a slovenly home, they're living in filth, that's different. That's abuse and neglect. But when you're talking about care protocols, that should be up to the parents, because there's a lot of natural healing out there. There's a lot of natural choices that far exceed the efficacy of Western medicine. And I think this is a personal choice. I don't understand why the government is allowed, or why these laws have been passed in the last 10, 20 years. It's like the medical industry is becoming more and more powerful, and as a result, people are losing their rights to make their own calls, to make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, making the own decision, but having it be the decision that's honored is the right I'm talking about. That's the right. If your decision is overridden by administrative entities and things like that, then that's what's not fair. And apparently, I'm getting a picture, and I could be wrong because I'm a long ways away from what's happening with this family, but I'm getting a picture of lots of turmoil, lots of heart-wrenching decisions, lots of heart-wrenching hours trying to do what they believe is right. And I feel like there are like vultures circling and waiting for the day that this goes one way or the other. And
right.
the fallout's going to be horrendous for both. If he succumbs to this, of course, now she has a better chance because now she's getting nutrition and there's lots of things going in her favor. So I hope and pray, and I think about this almost every day because I've been there. And I know the rest of the world stands still. It might as well be a movie you're watching, the rest of the world, because
right.
you are absorbed in what's going on in yours. And you really, really can't, you don't have the energy to do anything but put the energy into what you're praying for. And when I say that, I mean that with every of my being. If you have a child or a loved one that is passing or that is dying or you know that you can't stop it, that's one thing. But if you have a loved one or a child that is kind of iffy and you see that, you know, there's a possibility that this could turn around, isn't that what we're taught to do, to believe?
Right.
To believe in
And to do everything and not give up.
Exactly.
Not
exactly.
ever supposed to give up on your kid. So what are they doing that's so wrong here?
Nothing. The big thing, of course, is that they're not abundantly rich, so they can't pay private hospitals to do all this stuff for them. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any question in the very beginning, very sadly.
Yeah, if they were well making the same decision, nobody would have said boo.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They would have said, oh, that's what you want to do? Okay. And then somebody, a discreet little lady in a blue suit, more than likely with a nice emblem on the front, would have paid a visit to the office and had you sign the papers, and they'd know they were going to get their money, and that would have been the end of it. And
right.
I don't want to sound like, I'm being a bigot about that, but it's true. So, but we're
yep.
almost out of time. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow is recap day. We had a good week. We talked about Monday, of course, we recognized Martin Luther King and what it is he was really looking to do with all of us, and I hope it comes to fruition while I'm still alive. And we talked about breast implants and breast reductions, and then we did Bullies to Buddies on Tuesday, and Wednesday we did a great show with Shelley and Monica in regard to cancer and all the different options that are out there in regard to cancer. And today's show, and so tomorrow we will talk about the whole week. I hope you will join us. I hope everybody has a wonderful day. It is so cold every place. And to those of you who are living in upstate New York, please stay warm and keep your house warm and don't catch any colds. And do what Shelley said, do the vitamin D3, and if you can get your hands on cemento, I would take some of that as well and keep your immune system doing what it's supposed to be doing. So God bless everybody. Have a great day, and I promise you we will have the blue-green algae story, the superfood algae story, and we will talk about that very soon. Everybody go out there and make it a good day. God bless, and talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Shel.
All right. Take care, Rainey. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.